Radical love, lavish generosity, extravagant forgiveness, inclusive hospitality, compassionate action, selfless service, a passion for justice, creative nonviolence, simple living. Good day, good people. I'm Robert Farrell. This is Coalesce. Thank you for joining me. Coalesce is grounded in both and thinking, heart wisdom, and listening for the common good arising in dialogue, where we are present to presence. Coalesce provides an opportunity to encounter and discover the multiple perspectives that make our beautiful community. May we see with the eyes of our heart. May we love one another with peace and compassion. May all beings come to know the divine presence within. This is episode 42, Making the Unconscious Conscious, part 2. In his classic book, Memories, Dreams, Reflections, Carl Jung talks about being a young man at the outbreak of World War I and how the experience of massive destruction and slaughter was impacting him and so many Europeans. Through this trauma, Jung found, to the extent that I managed to translate the emotions into images, that is to say, to find the images which were concealed in the emotions, I was inwardly calmed and reassured. Had I left those images hidden in the emotions, I might have been torn to pieces by them. As a result of my experiment, I learned how helpful it can be from the therapeutic point of view to find a particular image which lies behind emotions, end quote. One of Carl Jung's foundational ideas is that mere words and concepts do not give us access to the unconscious. Certain sculptures, biographies, images, art, and stories can have such a striking effect on you because what your unconscious has already half known is brought home to conscious awareness by gazing upon them rather than analyzing them. Analysis, if it remains dominant, is merely a control mechanism of the ego. Let the images do something with you before you try to do something with them is the principle here. I believe that good art and good images, Jung would call some of them archetypal images, have the power to evoke an epiphany in you and to transform you at deeper levels. That's why I think good art is absolutely essential for good religion. The iconoclastic nature of the Protestant Reformation might have been its greatest fault. Sometimes you don't have to know what you're experiencing in a logical way, a rational way, but you can't take your eyes off of a picture or a piece of art. You're drawn to it because the epiphany is happening as the unconscious is being ferried across to your conscious mind, but unconsciously. What does good art, poetry, and mythology do? They tell you, without you knowing it, that life is not just a series of isolated, meaningless events as postmodernism sees reality. The great truths, when they can be visualized in images, reveal to you the deep patterns and tell you that you are a part of the course of history and all humanity. That deeply heals you. It is less informational than transformational, and it largely happens beneath your conscious awareness that it is even happening. You only see the fruits later. Carl Jung also believed that God speaks through dreams. Dreams can bring the unconscious into the conscious because the ego's defenses are down when you are sleeping. Truth that might seem threatening to your ego when it's awake and therefore not allowed in can slip undetected into your dreams. In Jung's words, myths which day has forgotten continue to be told at night. I hope you will now have permission to trust good art and great dreams as messages being lifted from the unconscious, and not just your personal unconscious, but the great collective where all things are one and shared. If I write or teach anything well, I am always drawing from that broader field and deeper well, and that is why I must honestly say, I did not do it. It is not my idea. Let us take this moment to connect with the great collective. With eyes closed and hands on heart, rest in the silence. Be still for 1 minute. Let me use our classic Christian logo, the cross, to illustrate what Carl Jung is trying to say about the transformative power of images. The cross is a deeply disturbing image of a naked, bleeding man with arms nailed open, dying on a crossbeam, a most unlikely logo for anything. It has probably been cheapened and the shock taken away by reason of too much familiarity. But perhaps this is because we do not gaze long enough or deep enough. Carl Jung says the cross might be the most significant image in Western civilization. The very fact that we keep repainting and sculpting this now ubiquitous image tells us that the soul must need to see it. Those who never gaze upon the cross, allowing it to work its metamorphosis, miss out on a huge healing secret, a divine disclosure that most humans would never dare to imagine on their own. One of my favorite lines from Carl Jung is revealing here. He says, "The whole world is God's suffering." This is not poetry, but precisely the fruit of mystical seeing or gazing until a deeper message comes through. Mystics see things in wholes. They connect smaller anecdotes and images to see bigger patterns. Carl Jung saw every act of human suffering as a participation in what Christians would call the eternal crucifixion of the one Christ. There is only one suffering, as it were, and we are all participants in it. When the single image morphs into a universal image, you get its archetypal significance, and as the prophet Zechariah says, you will weep for him as you would weep for your only child. You will mourn for him as if he is every child. Zechariah 12:10. That is how images can transform us, but only if we can move beyond the mere literal, specific image to the universal and always true image. Fundamentalists find this very hard to do. Mystics and great poets seem to be able to do nothing else. Mystics wait for experiential knowledge of the divine and are not satisfied with mere memorized answers. In the heart of the mystic, there arises an actual empathy with the suffering of God, which is sort of unthinkable to most of us. Read the memoirs of Eddie Hillesum and Anne Frank to catch a glimpse of this shared suffering. Does God suffer with us and in us? Did you ever think of it that way? I believe we are invited to gaze upon the image of the crucified, to soften our hearts toward God, and to know that God's heart has always been softened towards us, even and most especially in our suffering. Christian saints are often pictured gazing empathetically at the cross. Why? Because it is a soul-shattering image of the willing suffering of God in solidarity with every single shedding of blood since the foundation of the world. See Luke 11:50. It is the only half-satisfying answer to the whole human tragedy. But it does not satisfy the rational mind, only the empty and seeking soul. After true gazing, the cross becomes a two-way mirror. We see our own suffering, the suffering of the world, and God's suffering all as one and the same. The 14th century unknown author of the classic Cloud of Unknowing uses a most striking metaphor. He or she says that in God's eyes, all evil, suffering, and death are one lump, and that Jesus on the cross deals with it all in one lump. The entire human journey, including resurrection, is revealed in Jesus' course of life, which Carl Jung says is an almost perfect map of human transformation. Jesus is the one single new human, as the school of Paul puts it in Ephesians 2:15 and 4:13. At least for Christians, the Christ image is the archetype of everything. Both Paul and Carl Jung, along with every true mystic, sees things in wholes and not just in parts. Let us take this moment to connect with the archetype of everything. With eyes closed and hands on heart, rest in the silence. Be still for 1 minute. Carl Jung says, "Only the wounded physician heals." End quote. When life is hard, we are primed to learn something absolutely central. I call it God's special hiding place. The huge surprise of the Christian revelation is that the place of the wound is the place of the greatest gift. Our code phrase for this whole process is cross and resurrection, revealing that our very wounds can become sacred wounds if we let them. No surprise that an unjustly wounded man became the central transformative symbol of Christianity. Once the killing of God becomes the very redemption of the world, the pathway was revealed. Forevermore, the very worst things have the power to become the very best things. Henceforth, nothing can be a permanent dead end. Everything is capable of new shape and meaning. There is no advantage to playing the victim, and we are forever warned against victimizing others. Henceforth, we are indeed saved by gazing upon the wounded one and loving there our own woundedness and everybody else's wounds too. See John 3:14, 12:32, and 19:37. One's world is henceforth grounded in mutual vulnerability instead of any need to have power over one another. This is the core meaning of the Christian doctrine of Trinity. The inner shape of God is mutual deference and honoring among three, not self-assertion or autonomy by one. God is an event of communion and perfect vulnerability, not an old man sitting on a throne. All creation is a replication of that foundational pattern. When Pope Francis first bowed to receive the blessing of the people instead of just giving his own blessing, he was bodily illustrating this wondrous divine revelation which the Church itself has seldom understood. I usually find that most great people still carry a significant personality flaw. It is fairly predictable. St. Paul himself, clearly flawed, humbly recognized that God had given him a thorn in the flesh, an angel of Satan, to buffet me. 2 Corinthians 12:7, which he says was necessary to keep me from getting too proud. In most wise people I know, their authority and wisdom comes from the struggle with their wound or some essential conflict. Material moves from the unconscious to the conscious through conflict and struggle, hardly ever through perfect coherence or ideal performance. The Jungian aphorism holds true. The greater light you have, the greater shadow you cast. The search for the supposedly perfect is very often the enemy of the truly good. All important people must daily recognize their own imperfection and sin, or they become dangerous to themselves and others. All scapegoating, the process of both denying and projecting our fears and hates elsewhere, only perpetuates suffering. The scapegoat mechanism is hidden in the unconscious. It proceeds from our unrecognized but real need to project our anxiety elsewhere. Unfortunately, there's no elsewhere in the spiritual world. Either you transform your pain within yourself, or it is always an outflowing wound. You are transformed when you can refuse to project your anxieties elsewhere and learn to hold and forgive them within yourself, which can only be done by the grace of God, and which grace is always given. Jesus didn't project the problem onto any other group, race, or religion. He held it and suffered it, and thus transformed it into medicine for the world. He neither played the victim nor created victims, which is the modus operandi of much of the world. Jesus revealed the redemptive pattern, the third way, or what we call the Paschal Mystery. The significance of Jesus' wounded body is his deliberate and conscious holding of the pain of the world and refusing to send it elsewhere. Jesus' wounds were not necessary to convince God that we were lovable. His wounds are to convince us of the path and the price of transformation. Jesus agrees to be the universal wounded one, and thus to reveal God's willingness to share in our plight. Christians are the strange believers in a wounded healer, even though they seldom seem to appreciate the implications of this for themselves. If I were to name the Christian religion, I would probably call it the way of the wound. Surprise of surprises, Christianity is saying that we come to God not by doing it right, which teaches you very little, but invariably by doing it wrong and responding to our failures and suffering with openness and awareness. Jesus' wounded body is an icon for what we are all doing to one another and to the world. Jesus' resurrected body is an icon of God's promise, response, and victory over these crucifixions. And the two images contain the whole transformative message of the gospel. Let us take this moment to connect with the universal wounded one. With eyes closed and hands on heart, rest in the silence. Be still for 1 minute. Our practice this week is titled Shadow Work. Our unconscious reveals itself in many subtle ways. It takes a lifetime of intention and practice to notice our shadow and bring it into the light so that we are no longer controlled by it, but can integrate the shadow's energy and unique gifts into our conscious living. Let me offer the following ways to help us identify our shadow. Projection. When we have a strong positive or negative reaction to someone, that person is likely to be carrying an aspect of our shadow. Inner voice. During times of decision making or inner conflict, that other voice engaging us in an inner debate may be the shadow voicing its desires. To make good decisions, we need the views of this other. Bad choices or errors in judgment are often the result of not listening to the shadow. Freudian slips. When we say one thing and we mean to say another, this may reveal a hidden hurt or anger, some feeling that the shadow has carried for us until it found an opportunity to express it. Humor. If we examine what we say in humor, as well as what evokes our laughter, we can often detect our shadow. Dreams. Observing our dreams closely, we will see our shadow played out nightly and learn much about our unspoken motives, hidden faults and failures, unacknowledged virtues and vices, and underdeveloped or unrealized potential. I hope you'll take every opportunity to befriend your unconscious, for as other Jungian writers say, the individual who can manage not to be psychologically infectious, that is, free of the unconscious necessity to project all of his interior dark qualities onto others or onto ideologies and causes, is the individual on whom the ultimate peace of the world rests. Thank you for being with me. May you find your way in the depths of your shadow and making the unconscious conscious. Blessings to all.